Hi, welcome to Musings with Monse, a podcast where I have meaningful conversations with all kinds of artists. Musicians, poets, photographers, and other creatives share their honest stories, touching on the duality of being creative, the pure joy of making art, but also the particular struggles that come with it.
And honey, there's no way that I'll ever know. Oh, everything about you, but oh, how I love what I do. And honey, I love what I don't know too.
In this episode, I'm talking to rapper, singer, and author Dessa. She shares her story about making her living in the language arts, how slam poetry led her to Doomtree, and the difference between telling her story in song form versus book form. She also speaks about the unique type of heartbreak that follows after falling in love with her bandmate. For example, having to have him sing harmony on one of her songs that was written about him. And we also talk about post-war depression and the unglamorous parts of being on the road, such as the reality behind the pretty Instagram photos that you don't always see. I've known Dessa for a number of years now, and I'm a really big fan of hers, both her art and who she is as a person. I can't wait for you to hear some of her story. And if you enjoy this episode, which I think you will, you should definitely check out her memoir, My Own Devices, True Stories from the Road on Music, Science, and Senseless Love. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
It's what I don't know to, yeah.
Hello.
Hey, Dessa, it's Monse.
Hey, how's it going, Monse?
Good, how are you?
I'm good.
Where are you now?
Let's see, I just got back from a tour of the UK.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I'm in Minneapolis for another half hour or so, and then I head to Wisconsin.
Sweet. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So.
All right. Well, I know we don't have a lot of time, so we'll get right into it.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Could we just start by you giving us a little bit about your story, however you want to say it? I mean, you have such an amazing, full life, and you've done so much already in your years. So, as a writer, as a musician, and a bunch of other things. So, just let us know a little bit about you.
Yeah. So, my name is Dessa, and I make my living now as a writer and a touring performer. But I had kind of a circuitous route to that career path, in that I'd initially had an interest in creative writing. I really liked a genre called creative nonfiction. So it's like true stories, but told with all the care and craft that you'd use if you were writing a novel. I loved that stuff, but I wasn't sure how to get published. So I tried and failed in my early 20s. And a friend then invited me to a poetry slam and said, dude, I think that some of your essays could totally be performed. And I went back for the next competition and I won. And I thought I thought pretty highly of myself until learning that the reason I won is because all the really good poets had been on tour that week. But it was through slam poetry that I ended up getting introduced to a lot of the members of the Minneapolis hip hop scene. And I first joined a crew called Medita, and shortly thereafter joined the rap collective, of which I'm still a part, which is called Doomtree. So now, flashing forward, more than a dozen years, I make my living in the language arts any way that I can. So sometimes that might mean the release of an album. Sometimes that might mean partnering with the Minnesota Orchestra on stage. Sometimes that might mean writing a magazine or a newspaper article. Recently, I had my first book come out, which is called My Own Devices. And yeah, anything with words, for the most part, is something that I'm interested in exploring.
Yeah, totally. And I love that you've really just kind of poured your story and your love for words into so many different areas. As you know, I loved your book. I got to interview you at Book Passage a couple months ago,
yes.
And we talked all about your book. And I was wondering if you could tell us if telling your story in a book versus telling the story in songs, if it's this particular kind of vulnerability, doing it, putting it in a book rather than in music, or does it feel just as raw?
Well, I mean, they're really different forms, right? Even just in scope. I mean, a song is 3.5 minutes, so yeah. Nobody really is going to be able to do a a full, detailed, granular memoir. You know,
right.
whereas there are, you've got enough ink in the span of a hardcover book to tell a much more exhaustive story. And that in part just changes the nature of the endeavor, you know, sharing the details that made a moment embarrassing or difficult or victorious makes for a really, really different experience, I think, both for the artist and for the reader or the listener.
We talked a bit backstage about being, you know, in love with or having even just dated somebody who's well known, and like the particular kind of painful that brings, you know, because you can't escape them. And I was wondering if you could maybe talk a little bit about that. And also, I was wondering, I don't think I asked you this last time, but if you've read any Joyce Johnson.
I haven't read any Joyce Johnson. Okay. Have you got a title to recommend?
Yes. Okay. I was just thinking, I think you would love it. It's so Joyce Johnson was one of Kerouac's girlfriends.
Oh, and, interesting.
Yeah. And she wrote she's written a lot, but I've two books that I really, really love of hers. One is Minor Characters. And in that, she really talks about her story of being sort of in the shadows of him. And she was actually, you know, with him before he became famous, and then, you know, had to sort of deal with that really once he became this instant celebrity.
Right.
And it's just really beautifully written. And then she also writes this, or she shares their letters to each other in Doors
Wow.
Wide Open. I just think you would really resonate with it and love it. It's been, I don't know. I absolutely love her words and the way she puts it out there. So I wanted to recommend that to you.
Totally.
I'll send you the books, actually.
Well, thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks. I mean, well, as you know, like, you know, there are some obvious parallels on a smaller scale to the story that I lived, which was that as a young person, you know, my like 20, 21, I met this rap crew that I thought was fantastically talented and fell in love with one of them. And he fell in love with me. And more slowly than in Kerouac's world, but his career started to outpace the other members of the clique. And so he was getting, you know, fancy photo shoots and good reviews and traveling the state and then the region and then the country and then parts of the planet that he hadn't visited before. And we started to really dissolve. We had a lot of, like, even as our relationship fell apart, our feelings for one another stayed pretty strong, which was particularly inconvenient because it's like we didn't have a viable relationship, but there wasn't, and we didn't wish each other ill. You know, it was like, oh, forget that dude, man. You know, there was anger for sure, but for the most part, we wanted the other to succeed, and we didn't want to poison the well in which we were living, meaning we didn't want our anger and our arguments and our heartbreak to ruin this thing, Doomtree, that we were building. And so that involved a lot of tamping down feelings so that they wouldn't freak out, bother, irritate, or exacerbate, you know, the emotional vibe of the tour van. I mean, we're living in super close quarters, not for like months, but for, you know, intermittently for years, you know, for 2 years go by, 3 years, 4 years, 10 years and longer. And so trying to write the best songs that I can, be a graceful member of the crew, be a graceful human being to this dude for whom I have strong feelings. And to watch him struggle, although maybe to a slightly lesser extent, to be graceful to me. It was the story of my 20s. You know, I felt lucky to have found these dudes who I connected with in a way that I didn't connect with a lot of other artists. You know, if I were to have left Doomtree 5 or 6 years ago, like, I wouldn't have known where to go. I didn't want to go build my own crew, and I didn't want to be like, you know, after having 7 brothers, I didn't want to go and be an only child, you know, that sounded horrible. So to me, like, my life in music and my membership in Doomtree were inextricable, were indivisible from one another. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it's like, that's like extra tough because you have to really just you know, be with somebody that you're in love with that isn't, it's not working out, like day in, day out. But then on top of that, I remember in your book, you mentioned, you know, hearing him on the radio and, you know, that's the thing. It's like, you can't get away from it anywhere, you know? So
when do you heal? Hearing on the radio. And of course, you know, the details of our story weren't privy. So other people are bringing him up to you constantly in conversation.
Right.
Then when you're on the road, it's like, you know, if I'm performing a song about him, I remember one day he was like, yo, that could use a harmony. Do you want me to do it? And I was like, oh man, yes,
that's hilarious.
Because he's the only one in the clique who can really sing besides me.
Oh man.
Yeah. So it involves, like, you know, not only, I mean, you're literally on stage hyping, saying aloud one another's feelings five nights a week, six nights a week when you're on tour. So it was, there are harder things, right? There are parents with sick kids. That's real. And we didn't have children together. So that's a dimension that we didn't explore. But barring those, I mean, this was definitely the struggle of, it's been the struggle of my life thus far. And I'm sure there will be big wins and big struggles ahead. But,
Well, I can't wait for you to read some Joyce Johnson, because I swear I think you'll feel less alone a bit in it, you know, because like I said, it's a bit of a particular kind of thing that I think a lot of people, you know, who aren't dating people that they have to collaborate with and slash, you know, are well-known. So it's a special kind of hardship, I think. So I think Joyce Johnson will be comforting to you in that.
Looking forward to it. Yeah.
Awesome. And so one of the things, too, I wanted to talk about a little bit that I love that you called out in your book was in just a little like sort of footnote almost, but post-tour depression. You know, I think that's another sort of particular kind of thing that those in the music industry who travel on tour, you know, all know very well. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about that, because I do think that's a special kind of a painful thing, too, that we all deal with when you're on the road.
I mean, it's like, again, I want to frame it in that, you know, in some ways it is a lucky sort of pain.
Yeah, totally.
Right. In that I get to do something that I find purposeful. And that's not true of everybody. It wouldn't have been true of me in a different time and in a different place. You know, I wouldn't have had the luxury to align my work with my passion and my purpose. Right. Because I'd probably be helping out on a farm or with a kid on my hip. Mm-hmm. But all that said, this is the life we are leading. And, you know, so I came home from tour like 3 days ago now. And yeah, I mean, it's just, it's not quite a lump in your throat, but the world feels dimmer. And I think also, at least in the indie world, you know, it's a grind, and it's a grind that involves a lot of like adventure. It involves some affirmation, you know, when people are buying you a drink or even yelling your name or literally carrying your body hand to hand if you crowd surf. I mean, those are some incredible experiences. There's an adrenal constant charge. You know, you're not sleeping a bunch. Usually you're not eating very well. You are drinking a bunch, and it feels like an adventure. And then on the other hand, I admit that when you come home, you realize what you've given up to do that, you know? So like, I'm sitting in my apartment right now, and right before you called, I broke a glass. So there's like broken glass everywhere. And you know, my apartment looks like I moved in, I don't know, a month ago. I've been here for years. There are suitcases. There's 1, 2, 3, 4. I can see 5 packed bags from where I'm sitting right now, because it doesn't make sense to unpack them because I'm leaving again in half an hour. I don't date. I haven't this year, really, because I've been on the road too much. I haven't seen my mother or my father in a little while. I haven't seen my best, you know, I see my best friend twice a year, maybe. Like, you really are asked to take inventory of your priorities when you come home, because there isn't the crowd noise and the bright lights. And you realize that, like, dude, when no one's looking, this is how I live. And that can be sobering.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like you said, I don't bring it up to like try to like point out that, like, oh, poor me, like complain about it. It's just more like I think just to dispel a little bit the myth that, you know, being
that it's all glamorous.
Exactly.
Stuff. Yeah, totally. Know? So yesterday I had a gig, and the woman with whom I have performed for a long time, her name's Abby. We had a really nice dinner. And we were both just like marveling because, and she said aloud, she was like, I think this dinner makes up for a lot of the times we've eaten in bathrooms. Like, so right. much of your, yeah, I mean, you know, or changed in bathrooms and you're eating on your lap. Like, you know, a lot of clubs do not have a green room. And so in my level of success, so even though the Instagram photo looks rad right. the next day, right? There's a cool photo and I'm backlit and it looks like a full club. In reality, there was 56 people there or 100 people, and maybe the promoter lost a little bit of money on some nights anyway. And, you know, I'm standing in a neighboring stall with Abby while we're standing on our boots because the floors are sticky and filthy to try to put our tights on without falling down, you know?
Right.
And we're grown, you know, we're not 19.
Right.
Like, we're grown women. And that can be a little bit of a rugged, you know, it's a little bit of a rugged way to live sometimes, isn't it? It's those moments of victory very often are offset by at least a few moments of kind of demoralizing
right.
Grind. Yeah.
And it's also even still, you know, with all that unglamorous parts of being on the road, there's something about, you know, like you mentioned, the adrenaline
oh,
rush.
Totally.
And like, I even just last weekend, I was with my best friend, Heather Maloney. She's a singer songwriter. And I was sort of like, you know, unofficially tour managing her for the weekend. Just as a friend, and mm-hmm. we just had so much fun. And even though it wasn't mm-hmm. super glamorous, just being on and being like just going and doing all these fun things for the whole couple days, I mean, you do feel sort of a high, you know,
yeah,
during that time.
Totally.
And then coming back, and I mean, I dealt with this a lot. Even though I haven't been on the road as a musician, I've been, you know, on the road in other capacities.
As crew.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. And I know that feeling so well of just like going and doing all these fun things and just having, again, even if it's not super like, you know, fancy, it's still fun mm-hmm. and you know, charging and all that. And then you come back home and it's just that kind of sobering, you know, you're like, oh, this is.
Yeah, totally. And I can imagine that, you know, there are other like any high pressure field. Like I can imagine if you're a trial lawyer.
Yeah.
That buzz of like purpose, urgency, teamwork can probably lead to some lows and a come down
totally.
When you then finish the case and your partner's like, okay, dude, it's your turn to do all the dishes for a month. And, you know, the car needs a wash and, oh, now I got to go back to this mundaneness and I'm not sure how to feel as alive. But of course, that's my problem. That's not the people in my life's problem. So it wouldn't be fair for me to complain or burden them. So it can feel a little lonely because you don't want to be a jerk, right?
Right.
And you're like,
right.
Well, mom, I don't want to hang out. I just want to, you know, lay face down in my bed for a week and a half. No, I'm home. I want to see my mom, you know, and to do that, I can't be despondent, you know, I can't just kind of sulk. So there can be a lot of presenting, even yeah. in personal relationships sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. One of the things that, you know, is kind of woven throughout your book is you talk about just sort of living with being a, you know, having a melancholic state, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of time, which I think pretty much all artists can relate to. And one of the things I'm asking everybody that I'm interviewing, because, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to start this podcast was to just let people feel a little bit less alone in their own sort of pain. And I'm wondering if you could share, you know, when you are in a feeling melancholy or just going through a depression or a hard time, what's in your personal toolkit to help you move through it?
I would say my friend Sims, he's another member of Doomtree. He's a homie to like text, to call and to say, I've got, and he knows the business and he leads a similar life. So if I call him and say, I've got 7 minutes, do you have time to cry for a second? Can I cry too for a second? Then I got a sound check. He goes, yep, hit me, you know?
Yeah.
So he's got me. Or if there's a big win, I'll call him too. I don't mean to make it all dark, but yeah, I would say Sims has been a really huge help. And then, I would say that I struggled like on some lifestyle stuff, but on the times like when I have time to get in aerobic exercise, you know, like try to stay at a gym, at a hotel that has a gym, is now really important because And it sounds like that's a luxury in some way, but it's like, dude, if that's the only place you're staying and it's in hotels,
yeah,
then that's the only time you do what I mean.
Like, totally.
I'm aware of the extent to which my lifestyle is determined by the environment in what I put in which I put myself. So if on my backstage writer, I have 3 milk chocolate bars and gummy bears, like that's my diet.
Yeah, right.
I've made that decision in a document I sent 2 weeks in advance of tour for the next month,
right,
you know?
Right, right.
Whereas if I'm like, okay, if I need a sugar fix, I'm sure I'll find one. Instead, I'm going to do X, Y, Z, you know,
yep.
Salad and stuff. And similarly with the gym. Yeah. Like, being more mindful of drive. So like trying to do what I can to mitigate the lifestyle strain, has been helpful. And then I read a book by Russell Simmons, who's a dude to not like for a bunch of super good reasons, but he happened to write a really good book, I think on meditation for secularists, meaning, you know, I'm an atheist, and yep. he framed meditation in a way that made sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. A lot of people say meditation has really helped them, you know. And
yeah, and I would give myself right now as a practitioner, I'd give myself a C. So it's a habit I struggle to do, but I also do a lot of self hypnosis at night to fall asleep, which I don't enjoy, but it's effective. So,
yeah, well, it's funny with the meditation. Like, I would give myself a C too, but I think but I think that, you know, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to be like a good meditator, but I feel like you can meditate in different forms. Like, I sort of think of my like walking when I walk around everywhere. And that's sort of like how I make sense of all the talk chatter in my head, you know, to kind of calm down. And I mean, in a way that's kind of a form of meditation, you know, to just kind of be present and just like pay attention to everything around you. And, just saying, we can be easier on ourselves about it, you know?
That's totally true. That's 100% true.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Okay. So, next question, whose creativity in either the music or the literary space really moves you?
I think, in some literary stage presentation, I saw a performance by Miranda July that broke a lot of rules that I really dug. I thought it was really cool. And she involved the audience in unexpected ways and without feeling like unduly hokey or jokey, which sometimes can happen. I think when you try to break the fourth wall and conscript audience members to be part of a performance, she did an awesome job. I like listening to the way that the rapper Logic phrases his lyrics. I think he does some really cool stuff with timing. That's rad. I like listening to a couple of choirs. So called Affoletta out of Corsica that I really dig. They do just like really heartbreaking, ancient sounding, melancholy harmonies. And they do it though with like a pop sensibility. Like, they use like some of the nasal tones that us pop singers do instead of like trying to do a perfect Gregorian blend. And, and I think it's just so moving. I think that they're rad too. And then, recently I've been listening to, what is her name? Sasha Sloan, who does like super simple melodies, instrumentally, and then a super simple vocal melody. And why is that so good? So
I'm playing it to,
she just picks them, man. And so I played it for a couple of my producer friends going, dang, yeah, it's just when you got the right one, you could listen to it forever. Whereas I think left to my own, I'm just as likely to try to fix something by adding to it instead of simplifying.
Mm.
Yeah.
So how about, can you share one of your most memorable concert experiences?
Yeah, I was watching a member of Doomtree perform. I was watching POS perform at a really big venue. I was watching from the balcony. And the crowd was really pushing. It was really pushing. The front row was starting to uncomfortably be pushed against the front of the stage. This front of the stage was just above hip height. And there were these rolling, kind of like the wave, like these rolling swells of people pushing forward. You could see it from above, you know, like you were watching prairie grass sway. And then it started to get too intense. Like, the people in the very front were being pushed so far forward that they were slamming against the front of the stage, their torsos. And I went, oh my God. And the DJ was, it was stunned me how well he knew his role and that he saw the first girl hit the stage, you know, and I think maybe just a little bit of blood. And immediately he lunged for the bass knob. And as soon as he turned it down, the wave stopped. And I thought, whoa, we are creatures that respond to sound so literally and so immediately. I was stunned. Yeah, I was like, I was watching an instructional on mob behavior or something.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Wow. Who or what has been your greatest teacher?
I don't know. I think I've benefited from a lot of them. I mean, you know, in some ways, like, there's a very informal apprenticeship model, which is a term that we would never use while we're doing it, but there's an apprenticeship model in hip hop. You know, you're hanging out with friends that teach you how to do stuff better. So the other members of Doomtree, people like Laserbeak and Sims, Cecil Otter, Mike McLaughlin, POS, like Paper Tiger, those guys I've learned from all of them. And sometimes just by watching, and sometimes because somebody sat me down and went, do you know what you're doing here or no? as I was a young artist. And then, you know, I've been lucky enough in working with the orchestra to have a lot of players who are willing to say, this is a reed. This is how I make a reed. This is how I make it vibrate. This is how a trumpet works. Mm-hmm. This is a clarinet. This is an oboe. So I think a lot of musicians naturally trade information laterally, you know, and then after that conversation, if somebody has a question about how I work, so are you guys make, you know, how much of what you perform is expository, which is the classical musician's way of saying, are you making that up right now, or is this a written, you know? So I think I've learned most probably from other musicians. And then I was lucky enough to have a couple of parents who, for the most part, like encouraged me to try to believe that I could do things. And so that has been a guiding attitude, you know, that's been important, particularly in those beginning stages of my career, to like try to tackle new projects. Mm.
Uh-huh. Awesome. Awesome. How about a favorite place?
Okay. I'd say, at least one of my favorite places in the US is, like New Orleans and New York are just fascinating places to me.
Everybody, I feel like everybody I am friends with says New Orleans is like their favorite place. And I still haven't been. So I need
okay,
to go.
Okay, so you're going to convince me to read that book. I'm going to convince you to go to New Orleans.
All right, done. Uh-huh. Okay. Actually, I am planning on going next month. So
good.
I'll report
okay,
back.
Okay, good. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Uh-huh.
All right. How about a favorite memory?
There was a moment where I was bummed. Like I was painting my mother's basement and the floor red. And I had literally painted myself into a corner, and I was furious with myself because that's an expression that you're not like, it's a maxim. And I was pissed off, and I had to step on the red paint to leave. And my little brother and my then boyfriend conspired to cheer me up by dressing my little brother up in my old clothes. And so as I was kind of angrily trying to get this paint off, my boyfriend pretended to be the like fashion show announcer as my brother did his best catwalk, you know, in oversized clothes. And I remember the phrase, the vest says, let's do lunch. The bonnet says, I'm buying. and that was a really effective.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
What a story. That's so good. Okay. How about your favorite book?
Let's see. One of my most, like influential reads was probably the book, A Heartbreaking Work of Staggering Genius. Read that in my early 20s and yes, was blown away by not only the writing and the likability of the narrator, but like the whole form. I just never read a book like that before.
Yes, yes, yes. Awesome. How about a favorite podcast?
Oh, a favorite podcast. I like podcasts. I would say maybe the New Yorker Fiction podcast is a favorite. I check and check and check and check until it's posted, and then I get so excited.
Oh, I haven't listened to that one yet. I'm adding it to my list now.
Oh, man. Oh, I'm stoked. Okay, cool.
Yay.
Do you.
Awesome. Uh-huh. Thank you so much for making time to chat today.
Thanks. Yeah, for sure.
Have a good trip. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Musings with Monse, Artists and Their Honest Stories, is audio produced by the amazing Aaron Mooring. And the beautiful theme music you hear is by Heather Maloney.